Know the Source on One Radio Network. And a very pleasant good evening to you. It would be January 8th. 2009, and this is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, OneRadioNetwork.com. Good evening to you. It's just right at 7 o'clock Central Time on this Thursday evening. We will not take phone calls or emails tonight because we're on the line with Mr. David Icke. He is in Britain, United Kingdom, because of the time difference. We're a few hours ahead of actual show time. So not possible to take calls and emails, but I have lots of questions for David Icke, who's been just at the forefront of incredible research on all kinds of things involving governments, involving freedom and how this whole game works in the world, consciousness, about 20 books or so. And David Icke, welcome to the show. It's an honor to talk with you, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. Very nice of you to say so.
Nice to have you here. I've often wondered, folks such as yourself, so prolific, speaking and writing, what drives you, David Icke? What gets you up every day to keep at it, keep researching? What is it for you that really, drives you in all of this?
Well, it's multi-leveled, really. I mean, if you want to talk about daily experience level, what drives me is the desire to see people free from a sense of limitation, free from control by the few of the vast many, free of war and conflict, which is manipulated to divide and rule us.
Uh-huh.
On another level, what drives me, and this is fundamentally connected to what I've just said, is to understand the nature of the reality that we're experiencing, because we think we're on the cutting edge of knowledge and all the rest of it, but science basically has no clue, mainstream science anyway, has no clue even of the reality that we're experiencing, what's generating it, and all these endless questions that it can't answer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, to answer these big questions, you have to open your mind. In fact, you have to go beyond mind, which is a very, very low level of awareness, which is equated here to intellect, and go into consciousness. And consciousness is beyond mind and can see beyond mind and can symbolically stand on the top of the hill,
mm-hmm.
while mind is stuck in the valley, observing a single brick.
Yes, sir.
The mind is looking at things in a myopic way, whereas consciousness, if you get to that level of awareness, it's seeing that the brick is part of a building, and the building is part of a street, and the street's part of a city, and the city, so on and on it goes. It's a completely different point of observation.
Do you think that that's one of the primary reasons why you and I and others listening have incarnated at this time, David Icke, to experience this, and we're in such a very dramatic and changing and compelling time that it's actually easier to do now than maybe it was before, because we were maybe more in the Maya and didn't know it.
Well, I obviously can only speak for myself, and
yeah.
The extraordinary synchronicity and coincidence of my life in the last 20 years. Makes it pretty clear to me that for whatever reason I have come to do something.
Uh-huh.
Because there is without question some unseen force that's handing me pieces in the puzzle and continues to hand me pieces. I mean, my life has now gone into a new phase of extraordinary experience and awareness opening up about the nature of reality. And it's definitely been coordinated in some way.
Yes, sir.
It's not by accident.
Yeah. Is this coming to you more at night when your body is sleeping, David Icke, where you as soul are say traveling, for example? And do you suppose you have teachers helping you along the way?
Well, I wouldn't call them teachers. I mean, I think one of the things that we need to do is to get beyond teachers and beyond that pupil-teacher relationship and realize that we are all consciousness, having an experience in a virtual reality universe. And the physical body, which the human race invariably identifies itself with, is actually just a holographic biological computer that allows consciousness to experience this reality. I'm holding a phone at the moment. My consciousness couldn't hold this phone. It's vibrating too quickly. Mm-hmm. So I take on an outer shell, like we all do, so I can interact with this reality that I wish to experience. What's happened, Patrick, and this is a fundamental part of the conspiracy and the enslavement of the human psyche, is from cradle to grave, all the messages basically are that you are your body, and what mm-hmm. you see in the mirror is you.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the vehicle. What you is the eternal I, and that's what leaves at what we call death, which is not death at all. It's when the computer gives up, it's this false self identity that we are manipulated to live, that puts us in the point of enslavement. And you know, if you look at what consciousness is, it's all possibility. There are no rules within consciousness. You can't have rules and all possibility,
mm-hmm.
because the rules would say this is not possible and that's not possible, therefore you're not in all possibility. All possibility by definition has no rules, it just is. Whereas when you enter this virtual reality computer game, and I'm not being symbolic either. I'm talking in terms of a technology or a knowledge that's created this, which is light years beyond what we perceive as a computer game now, or what we perceive as a computer now. But the principle is the same. We're living in a virtual reality universe. And, you know, illusions only control you if you think they're real. And the whole conspiracy basically is founded on persuading, if you want to call it, incarnate consciousness, that it is the body, and that what it is experiencing is real rather than an illusion, a decoded illusion, like I call it the cosmic internet.
Uh-huh.
If you log into the internet in Australia or South Africa or South America or North America or London, wherever on the planet, you're logging into a collective reality. You will go to different places in that collective reality, i.e. different websites, just as we experience different lives and experiences within this cosmic internet. But it's still the same collective reality, and that's what we're experiencing here. The thing is, if you went on the internet and believe the internet was your world and it was real, then you're going to have real problems. You're certainly not going to be able to dictate your life within that internet, because you think you're not in control because of the perception you have of the world you live in. Once you realize that the game that we're in, and you start to become conscious, then you can start to influence the game rather than the game living your life. You live your own.
So then what you're saying, can you say then that when you get into the political and that whole thing that you've written so eloquently about over the years, that this is the ultimate kind of illusion, where these people are trying to convince us that, for example, money is real, or mm-hmm. you know, or this law or this executive order is real, and it really affects you because I've signed this piece of paper, etc. So it's the idea that they keep creating this idea of reality that's just their reality, and they want us to jump into it.
Yeah, well, I'd go even further, and I if you look at the fact that this virtual reality universe is actually digital, certainly on one level it's digital,
uh-huh.
And you see how you can see these advertisements where they put digital people in with quote real people.
Yes.
And the more and more sophisticated they're becoming, the less you can tell them apart. You still can to an extent, but it's getting less. Now you multiply that ability by a billion times, to the level of awareness and potential that is behind this virtual reality universe. And you can drop digital people in, symbolized by the woman in the red dress in the first Matrix movie, who have the ability to appear to be like everyone else. I mean, if you follow where robotics is going now, even in the public arena, never mind in the underground secret projects that no one knows about, which are light years ahead of anything the public are allowed to see, they're already starting to put emotions into robots and give robots the ability to not just react to data, but to assess it and make decisions on it. It's what they call biological computers rather than just computers. The biological computer, which they're developing around the world now, has the ability to assess information, what we would call think. Mind is the ability to think. It is a computer program. Mind is a computer program. Consciousness is not the same as mind. And, when you see that potential, it is after 20 years of research in 47 countries, my strongly held view that the key network of families that are manipulating world events and have been for centuries are actually artificial intelligence. I don't think they're conscious beings as we would perceive conscious beings. And this explains many, many things. One of the things it explains is why, and I've observed this for 20 years, and it's not just a now and then when there's an R in the month. This is a constant. This network of families have no ability to empathize with the consequences for others of their actions. Now, if you cannot empathize with the consequences for others of what you do, there are no limits to what you will do. And so for you and me to pepper bomb Baghdad and so far create at least a million, some estimates 1.5 million casualties, dead and injured people, then we couldn't do that because we would empathize with the consequences of what we do. If you don't have that, then anything goes. And how do you, I say to people listening to this, go to your desktop computer and persuade it to have empathy with the consequences of what it is programmed to do. Impossible. It doesn't have the ability to empathize. It has the ability to compute, which is a mind level action reaction, not consciousness. And, when you see what's happening in Israel as we speak, and you can bomb the most densely populated piece of land on the planet, I think the last figure I saw, we're closing in on 700 people dead. And you do not have the ability to empathize with the consequences of what you're doing. Knowing that children are going to be killed, it can't be any other thing happen when you bomb somewhere like Gaza. This is artificial intelligence at work. This is not consciousness. Consciousness would never do that.
As you hear so often, and I've said it over the years, is like, I don't really understand these people. And it's like they're not human. And I said
they're
not. I said it often before, I even heard of, your work. And so your work has actually proven that they are programs. They're either a holographic or then, of course, you talked about the reptilian kind of idea.
Which is another program.
That's another program?
Another program, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Another
hologram, so to speak?
Yeah, everything's holographic.
Right.
And that's the way the program works.
Mm-hmm.
But all the questions that quantum physicists ask, they can all be answered by the fact that we live in a virtual reality universe.
Explain now what you mean to folks that are hearing that, David Icke, but they don't really understand what that means. Explain what that means, virtual reality.
Virtual reality is a think of a software program on a disk that you put in a computer.
All right.
On that software program is information, right?
Mm-hmm.
Information. That's all it is. What the computer does is read the information. And it takes that information and it turns it into pictures on the screen, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, what we're doing through our body computers holographic biological computers. Our bodies have the ability to assess information and make decisions on it. That's what the human immune system is doing all the time, for instance. But there are many, many other levels of this. You have a situation, for instance, where the body computer is constantly receiving information from its environment. And this goes with the animal species as well as humans. It's all the same. And it's making adjustments as a result of the information it's receiving. You're not actually consciously making the adjustments. The body mind, what I call body consciousness, is making the adjustments. And there can be little adjustments, like you go into a cold place and it will adjust the body temperature to cope. And there can be massive adjustments, that's what we call evolution, physical evolution, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
When an environment changes slow enough for the body computer to react, we call that evolution of the species. When environmental changes happen too quickly for the body to react and to compensate, we call that extinction. And so the body computer is working all the time like that. And the body organism is a crystalline organism. You know, people don't realize just what a crystalline organism it is. For instance, the membrane of every cell, and we have trillions of them, is a crystalline substance. It's liquid crystal. And so we are fantastic at a body level. We are fantastic receiver transmitters of information. So what we're doing through the body computer is precisely the same principle, although staggeringly more sophisticated, of logging into the internet with a computer. The computer then reads the collective reality, and that's what's happening.
That is virtual reality.
That's virtual reality. It's information that, when read, gives the appearance of a reality with solidity. See,
then we think it's real.
Yeah,
we think it's real because it looks real.
It appears real.
It appears real, and so we actually think it's solid.
Yeah, and this is where you get the contradiction in quantum physics, which answer, which is how solid quote reality made of atoms. When atoms have no solidity, they're little pockets of energy, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is they're not solid. We decode the information into apparent solidity, and we experience that sense of reality in a solid world, but it's not. And there's another thing. That solid world doesn't exist outside of us. It only exists within our heads in the three-dimensional solid form, just as the only place that television exists in the form that we perceive it is actually on the screen. Everywhere else, television is frequency fields and electronic circuits and digital coding.
So that would really beg the question, David Icke, then if we don't experience it and decode it and believe, you know, then it wouldn't exist.
Well, if it's
right?
not...
If I'm not here, none of this is here.
Well, if this is where we go back to...
I mean, that's pretty spooky, but you know what I mean? If my consciousness just poofs out, then everything else does.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the body computer's doing the reading. The consciousness, if consciousness is there...
But consciousness always was and always will be.
He's doing the observation.
Right.
Yeah, but, there's consciousness, which is... infinite awareness, which is all possibility,
mm-hmm.
and then there's mind, which is a much lower level of awareness. That's what happens within this reality.
Mm-hmm.
There's been this this theme through more open-minded scientists that if this reality only exists when it's observed, we can now see why that is correct. This reality only exists in its apparently three-dimensional solid form when the information is decoded. Otherwise, it stays in an information state. You know, you can have a computer disk, and it's just information. It's only when you put it in the computer and the computer reads it that it becomes pictures.
Yes,
same
sir.
Principle.
Same idea. So if we're, what you're saying, going back to that, if we see a picture or a film or something of, say, Mr. Bush or an Obama on the screen, that it might necessarily not be a perception of a like we are. In other words, it could be anything. I mean, it's only what we perceive it to be. Am I saying that correctly?
It's the way we read it.
But it could be something other than a body like we have. No?
Yeah, yes, it could be. It could be a digital implant that is basically our bodies are digital. As well.
So our bodies aren't really real either, I guess.
Nothing within this physical world is, quote, real.
Yeah.
It's just information which we decode. You know, when I look down at my legs now as I'm holding this phone, I'm decoding them. I'm decoding that information, mm-hmm. that information construct into a physical reality. So I see legs.
Yes.
So we're doing it to ourselves as well.
The only thing real is consciousness or ourselves as soul or God or whatever you want to say.
I wrote a book when I started writing about this virtual reality that we live in. It must be best part of 4 or 5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was called Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion.
Yeah.
And what I was saying there is infinite consciousness is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And that's the way it seems to me.
That's all there is, right? As the Beatles said, all there is love. I mean, that's pretty much. So then our job, do you think, being here in this what seemingly just bizarre kind of world is... Can we say that we're blessed in a way to be here at this time because it's easier to see ourselves as soul and love and God in separate from all this other, the illusion?
Well, I wouldn't say blessed. It's a decision. You know,
we chose to be here, I suppose.
My feeling is that this virtual reality was actually created for benign reasons. It was a way of having a certain kind of experience, for consciousness to have a certain kind of experience. What I think's happened, it's been hacked into using computer parlance, and it's been diverted into this enslavement situation, when that was not the idea at all. And, thrust, and I know I'll get there, my thrust is to... locate how this hacking's taken place and reverse it, because you can do that because we talk about changing this reality from a prison to a paradise,
right?
But this reality is a projection. It's a decoded projection.
Yes, sir.
The symbolism, or not even symbolism, the way it is, it's like standing on at the front of a movie theater, shouting at the movie and protesting at the movie because you don't like it.
That's right.
The movie ain't going to change. What we've got to do is find out where this movie's being projected from, or more important, if given what I've just said, where this movie is being hacked into from.
Okay, let's stop there a second, because you said two really interesting things. Where this movie is being projected from and where it has been hacked into from. I'd like to really dig in there a second, David. If it's... projected from, is it not projected from ourselves as soul, or let's say you use the term soul or consciousness? So aren't we doing the projecting?
We're doing the decoding.
The decoding. Now, what's the difference between decoding and projecting?
It's the difference between being the software and the computer.
Okay. In other words, if we're just allowing it to flow through and then thinking that whatever we're projecting is real, we're just being the computer.
Yeah,
right.
When consciousness is involved,
yes, sir. So,
consciousness starts to see the game, and it starts to influence the game, and it starts to make different decisions that the computer would make. So, this is why so many conscious people tend to be maverick people, people who don't know what they're going to do next because they don't know, and no one else will know. Who flow with the synchronicity of life, who follow their intuitive knowing rather than following the thought of what? Mind.
Yes, sir.
And so the whole of this hacked into virtual reality has been set up, what we call society, has been set up to keep people in mind and out of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the situation, this reality, this society, worships mind. It worships intellect You need intellect to progress within it. If you're conscious, then you start to go in a different direction to where intellect will go, and you're called strange, crazy, dangerous, and weird, because intellect can't understand, it can't compute consciousness when it's expressing itself. And I a few months ago, spoke at the Oxford Union, this famous debating society at Oxford University. And when I do my public talks, like I'm talking in Los Angeles, I'm doing 7 hours about all this stuff in mid-February, I will give what I know to people and let them get on with it. But when I was speaking to the Oxford Union, which is where these so-called elite Oxford students, the academics and professors and scientists of tomorrow, are developed. I sat there beforehand thinking, how do I put this in baby steps so these people can get it?
Yes, sir.
And the reason is they are so encased in mind, intellect, the program, that they cannot break out of it to see the connections between things, because intellect and the mind has a perception of everything being apart from everything else, rather than everything being one unified whole.
Yes.
And so it literally finds it almost impossible to get its head around, its mind around,
yes, sir,
these this process or these concepts of unity rather than division.
So it's almost, it's just hard to get a foothold in there because it's so it's calcified, so to speak, with the mind.
It's like talking to concrete, talking to a wall. But you can, if you do it in the right way, you can start to break that concrete down. And as that concrete starts to break, so the potential to see beyond the limitations of mind starts to manifest. And, you know, I've seen people who've read my stuff and all that stuff who have gone from dismissing it to saying, I kind of start to understand what you're saying. And it's because the process of breaking down this this concrete, this vibrational concrete that we call mind, has started to allow a higher level of awareness to come in and be part of the perception process.
Talk a little bit about this hacking into idea. I'm having trouble, David, connecting the idea. So we're so in consciousness and we're doing the projecting. But if we're doing the projecting, what does it matter if someone hacks in?
I'm not saying we're doing the projecting.
But we want to be, though, right? Consciousness.
Yeah, we want to be. But okay. If your point of focus, your point of observation, is not in consciousness, but is in the mind program, then the mind program is constantly telling you that it's selling you the belief in limitation.
Sure. You're this and you're that, and you can't do this, right?
Yeah. Which means you're not going to consciously access consciousness or possibility when your focus, your belief, is absolutely encased in endless limitation.
Endless black holes, and so that's the part that's been hacked into, not consciousness.
No, consciousness can't be hacked into.
No, because
these people can't touch consciousness.
That's
what they have to do is run the system to isolate people's sense of awareness in the program, in mind.
Yes.
They can manipulate mind because it's a program. They cannot manipulate consciousness, which is beyond the program, and therefore they the whole of society is set up from cradle to grave to keep us in mind and not consciousness.
Consciousness then is impenetrable, right? Because it's totally you just can't hack into that.
You can't hack into consciousness.
It's who we are.
You hack into the experienced reality.
The experienced reality.
That's the difference.
So that's what the whole people have been doing, Illuminati and the Bank of England, all that stuff for thousands of years, I guess, huh?
Well, you know,
I mean, that's what they've been doing?
Well, I don't say I don't think they've been doing it. I think they've been playing it out.
Because playing it out.
I think they are.
There's no they there. You know what I mean? There's no consciousness behind the boys, as we call them, or the people that are seemingly controlling the world. There's no consciousness behind that.
No, what I'm saying is, as I said earlier, I think these bloodlines that are behind the five sense manipulation, mm-hmm. our daily experienced manipulation,
yes, sir.
are artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence.
They're playing out a program, and the program is run by whoever's hacked into this reality, into this digital reality. Now, who's that? I don't know yet, but yeah. I'm going to find out.
Would that be what we call evil? Or Satan or whatever, you know, the religions?
Well, you know, who knows,
right?
Who knows, but I'll find out before I'm finished. I think I'll find out, you know, in the not too distant
You're
going to
find out, right?
Well, the way my information coming to me is going, it's inevitable that I'll find out because yeah. of the direction it's going. But this is what we're looking at, and you know, this reality is not, or this global society is not controlled in its origin by men in dark suits sitting around a table. That's still a level of playing it out. This whole reptilian thing is still a level of playing it out. What we need to do is to find out what's hacking into and what's and how this reality has been hacked into, and therefore what is controlling these digital artificial intelligence programs that are the Illuminati bloodline.
Yes, sir. But if we are, and of course we are, consciousness or soul, love, infinite, all possibilities, why do we then even care about what these guys are doing whatsoever and who's even hacked in and just leave them alone and go our own way?
Because most people on this planet, Patrick, aren't conscious.
Yes, sir, I understand. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So our job is...
They're in mind. They're in mind, and because they're in mind, they are at the mercy of those that control the program, which is mind. You know, people talk about my mind and your mind. No. It's not your mind or my mind. It's the mind. This is the situation we're facing, I would strongly suggest. And we have to go beyond mind into consciousness before we can take control of our reality.
Yes.
Otherwise, we are just software programs playing out and following the program. When psychologists and people like Carl Jung, they say, or in his case said, that they can break down human personalities into 12 archetypes mm-hmm. and combinations of them.
Mm-hmm.
How can they do that when you're dealing with all possibility? You can't.
Yeah.
They're talking about mind. They're talking about programs. And given what I've been saying, it is absolutely feasible that you could therefore break down human personalities who are trapped in mind
sure.
into a handful of archetypes and combinations of them.
So is it fair to say then what I alluded to before, say, well, just go for consciousness, go for God, go for love, forget all this other stuff. David Icke or many of us could do that and move away to some island and never even think about it again. But then what would the point be of even being here? Is that fair to say? Am I on the right track?
I see that. But, I mean, you can go off to an island. You're still in the program.
Yeah, you're still in there.
The thing is to become conscious, to stop identifying with what you see in the mirror, realize that that's a vehicle for consciousness to experience this reality, drop all belief systems and senses of limitation,
uh-huh.
and start to go back to a blank sheet of paper where you let your conscious awareness perceive reality and come to its perception of reality, instead of having a series of rules and regulations and this and do's and don'ts and lists telling you what reality is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is what happens from cradle to grave. From the moment a child is born, the parents are, of 99% of the time, without any desire for malevolence, are programming that child to believe in the reality they believe in.
Yes, sir.
They then go to school and college and university, and that happens on a much more sophisticated and ongoing onslaught kind of scale. All the peers around them through their lives are confirming the same sense of reality because they're all in the same mind program. So this is why you have to step out of the box, the program, stop taking its rules and regulations and its sense of reality and everything, and start to construct your own based on what you feel is right rather than what the system is telling you must believe. Yeah. And of course, what happens then, Patrick, and my goodness me, do I know that from my own experience in Britain and elsewhere, you then get, the more high profile you do it, as I did in the early 90s, the more abuse and onslaught and condemnation and ridicule that you get.
Yeah, you really got it, didn't you?
But if we really do want to be conscious, then we need to keep on that path, despite what anything the program throws at us.
Yes, sir.
And then eventually you'll start to break through.
So the job then really is to hold our ground, so to speak, and not go run away.
It's to know we're consciousness. Yeah. And to
know that nobody can hurt us.
Observation.
Nobody can hurt us.
Well, even pain. You see, consciousness doesn't feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
The program feels pain because programmed to feel pain. You know, I mean, you smack your foot. You don't feel pain in your foot until that message has been transferred to your brain that decodes it into pain. Then you feel the pain in your foot. It's all a program, and consciousness is beyond all that. But like I say, those that have manipulated this reality are terrified of consciousness expressing itself because that's the end of the game. The game only works if people believe that the game is real.
So then can we say then one of the reasons we're seeing so many more things out there with the powers that be trying to control us and all the fear going out with terrorism and executive orders and, you know, vaccinations, God knows what, because they sense that more people are becoming more conscious, so they're just kind of piling on more stuff.
Well,
is that a fair statement?
Well, yeah. For this reason, if you look at a software program or a DVD disc of a movie,
uh-huh.
It plays through. Okay, one of the great illusions that is written into this program is a sense of past, present, and future.
Yeah,
there's only the now. There's only this experienced moment. But what and this is why when people have near death experiences, they say I had no sense of time.
Mm-hmm.
They had no sense of time because they were no longer subject to the sense of reality of their body computer reading this reality and decoding a sense of past, present, and future. It's real simple. And so when we are in that state where we are decoding this reality, all these things and all these limitations and all these accepted, everyone knows that, mate, past, present, and future and time exist and all that stuff. That all appears to be confirmed because we're decoding it. But once you get out of it, it's a very, very different reality.
And so it's easy to see that it's not really past, present, and future once you jump out of it.
Yeah, but in it, when people first said, I came across this concept, there's no such thing as time. You know, when you first come across it and you're still decoding reality very powerfully through the body consciousness, it's very, very difficult for people to perceive a sense of time, or no time, rather. It's very difficult because constantly they're decoding a sense of time,
mm-hmm.
and they're battling against that. But what I was just going to say in relation to the question that you asked, if you have a movie, for instance, you put it in the DVD player and it plays,
mm-hmm.
You start to watch scenes in the movie, and the scenes in the movie that you've watched, they appear to be your past. The scenes you're watching appear to be your present. The scenes that are yet to come, you perceive as the future.
Yes, sir.
Then eventually, but past, present, and future all exist on the same disc, and it's just where the laser is reading at that time that gives you the perception of what's past and what's future. So at the end of the movie, what happens? The disk goes back to the start again. And it's the same with a software program and a computer. And I feel that this reality, certainly the hacked in part of it, is cycular. And it goes through a program, it plays it out, and then it goes back to the start and plays through it again. And, of course, if you're not in this reality long enough to see it all go from start to finish, you come in and you experience a bit of it, then you think, of course, that you've gone from past to future when actually you still all did the same thing. So there are points in this cycle where certain things happen. And I think that what's happening now within the program is that there is a time when the program has reached a point where, for whatever reason, it's becoming easier in this time window, if you want to call it that, time window within the program's perception anyway, to access consciousness and to see the game.
Oh, so this is an opportunity time.
Yeah, great opportunity, yeah.
And,
you know, I mean, I think the Chinese have a word meaning danger and opportunity. Well, this is that word. We're experiencing it. And you know, when I started out in the nearly 20 years ago talking about this stuff, I couldn't get enough people to trouble a phone box.
Right, right.
And now thousands of people turn up wherever I go all over the world. Now, that is a real confirmation that something's going on here. There is an awakening, and it is an awakening. It's an awakening from mind into consciousness. It's the very same principle as awakening from the amnesic sleep that a hypnotist puts you into, and then waking up to see that it was all a dream.
Mm-hmm.
The amnesia is starting to break. And the curve is going up. Of course, because that doesn't get reported on CBS or the BBC, people are not aware of the scale of what's going on outside of the general public awareness. But because I travel so much, and over this period of time dealing with the information that I do, I've seen it, and I'm seeing it all over the world.
Yeah.
So this is a great time, and I am incredibly optimistic about this time. Very challenging, and they're going to try to push the lid down more, and we're going to see that. But in the end, this stupid game is going down, and we're going to get back to what we really are, which is consciousness having an experience rather than mind having someone else's experience.
David Icke, we talk a great deal on this radio network, One Radio Network, about health and nutrition. It's really probably 70% of our conversations. What with what you have learned over the last 20 years, knowing that we are not the body, we're not the mind, and what kind of ideas can you give us, what you perceive would be some clues on how to help us to engineer this body with what we put in it and et cetera, to make it easier for us to see ourselves as soul or consciousness and not feel so so rotten, living in the body sometimes?
Well, this comes to an area that I've been writing about for some years.
Uh-huh.
If you want to stop something accessing something else, then you need to destabilize it. You need to make it work less efficiently as you can. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Say you've got the world's best computer programmer,
mm-hmm.
symbolic of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
sitting at a computer, and that computer is full of viruses.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that he's the best computer programmer in the world. He's not going to get that genius through the computer and onto the screen, the experience, because the computer is so flawed that it's not going to be able to react to his instructions.
That's a good analogy.
Right?
Yeah.
This is what food additives are about, and mm-hmm. and drink additives and electromagnetic pollution is about. You see,
yes, sir.
The body... on one level is a electrochemical organism. On another level, it's a crystalline organism, because there are different levels of everything.
Yes, sir.
And therefore, anything that chemically or electromagnetically destabilizes the body computer is going to make it less efficient as a receiver-transmitter of not just information from the program itself, but to be able to lock into consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the young people, if you go back to the 80s, the young people then are coming through now to be the young adults and beyond that are going to be in the world through this period of danger opportunity. And so you don't want them, as best you can, to have efficient receiver transmission potential,
right,
to lock into consciousness.
Right.
So when you go back to the 80s, 70s too, but particularly the 80s, that's when they started bombarding, well, food and drink in general, but particularly that aimed at the young, with all these chemical concoctions, and you've got the mobile phones and all this electromagnetic pollution that even some mainstream newspapers are talking about now in terms of its effect. And if you look at the graph of when these food additives, etc., started really being introduced, and the graph of childhood behavior problems,
yes,
the
sir.
Graphs go up together.
Yes, sir.
Why? Because the destabilization of the body computer electrochemically means that it's not computing reality in the way that it potentially should, and therefore it gives a distorted decoding, therefore a distorted sense of perception, therefore a distorted balanced behavior. This is how the process works. The people who are putting this in the food, in the factories, and the people that are selling the food in the supermarkets, they've got a clue what they're doing. It's in the shadow realms behind the people that you see where these things are developed. And one of the key vehicles for all this, and one of the most, if you want to use the word evil as live written backwards, which is very appropriate, then you've got to look at the biotech industry and the pharmaceutical industry and horrendous, grotesque operations like Monsanto in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the engine room, the engineering of these assaults on the body computer come from, and then they come through the transnational food giants onto the supermarket shelves.
So all of this, the high fructose corn syrup, cell phones, genetic GMO foods, and all that, they just make it more difficult for soul or consciousness to kind of see the forest for the trees, because the body is just not working, not computing, right?
It's not computing.
It's just not computing.
You know, if you, for instance, have a radio and it's not quite on the station,
right?
You can't hear very well, can you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And can the body react to the impulses of consciousness when it is electrochemically destabilized?
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, and I would you know, strongly emphasize this, all that I'm talking about is like a fly to an elephant's back to consciousness. And consciousness, if we really open ourselves to it, is all powerful and can change anything.
Can change everything, probably our
change
DNA
everything.
And everything.
Of course it can. I mean, the DNA is just a receiver transmitter mechanism.
Yeah,
it's crystalline too. And if you, I've written about this in my books. But if you look at the shape of DNA and the spiral and everything, it's a perfect transmitter receiver.
So then with consciousness, we probably and are changing things every day that we don't even know about, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the better, because of what we believe and what we think and what we project.
Yeah. And
probably a big part of health and disease, huh?
Yeah, because in terms of, you know, health and stuff, it's different levels. Depends what level you're working at.
Uh-huh.
If you're working at the level of physical reality, electrochemical reality, then you can affect the body with things like herbal remedies, things like energy machines and stuff like that.
Sure, the Tesla
like,
stuff or whatever.
Yeah, and Rife technology.
Right.
But if you really, really, really come into consciousness, then you don't need any of that stuff, because consciousness will sort it anyway.
That's, you know, probably where we're going, right, David Icke?
That's where we're going.
That's where we're going.
You
right?
See, the the body is a hologram, and this is where so many of these alternative remedies come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had long conversations with alternative practitioners in various fields,
mm-hmm.
and they know it works from their experience, but they don't know why it works or what it's based on. And yet, when you understand that the body's a hologram, then it all starts to make sense, because a hologram is a illusory three-dimensional energy field,
mm-hmm.
which we decode into 3D. But there's an extraordinary characteristics of holograms, which passes down to the holograms that we make and can buy in the shops, and that is that every single part of the hologram is a smaller version of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you cut a holographic print picture into a four, it's what they call a the interference pattern,
mm-hmm.
the wave pattern that is created in the formation of holograms, and then you fire a laser at that wave pattern, interference pattern they call it, and from that interaction comes an apparently three-dimensional form, which is actually just illusory.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, if you cut that interference pattern, that wave pattern, into four and fire the laser at each of the four, you will not get a quarter of the whole picture. You will get a quarter-sized version of the whole picture.
You get the whole thing.
Exactly. Now, this is how reflexology works.
Huh.
This is how this is why acupuncture can find places in different parts of the body, like the ear, that represent all the other different parts of the body. This is why you can treat somebody on the foot to treat the heart or the lungs or something else. It's because you're treating the microcosm, and therefore, because of the connections within the hologram, you are affecting the macrocosm of the body. This is how it works, so you can operate on that level. But as I've said in my books over the years, all this, why it's a massive extension on from this ludicrous mainstream medicine based on pharmaceutical profits, it's still a stepping stone. The big leap is from that to the point where we could become so conscious that we don't need any middlemen or middle therapies.
Right.
We just directly change the hologram and balance the hologram as we choose to do it.
Uh-huh.
That's the big thing. That's where we're going.
It feels like it, because I think with all the extraordinary advances we're making with, like you said, the Rife machines and the biophoton machines and the lasers and stuff, then on the other end, of course, you have the other side trying to kibosh it all, and they've always been trying to stop it with codecs and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess the idea that there's always a way, that there's always a remedy, that if they ever do, you know, manage to really cut a lot of this stuff off, then we're just going to have to get more creative and figure out how to do it without the machines, right?
Well, the thing is that they operate on what I call the first domino.
The
first domino, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
People have said to me, why do these people go so over the top to stop things that don't seem to be of any danger to them? And it's because...
What do they mean? Give us an example that don't seem to be any danger.
Well, you know...
Like vitamin E or something like that?
Yeah, things. Yeah. Well, even more importantly, anything to do with vibrational medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to do with vibrational understanding.
The Tesla stuff and all that. Yeah.
Because they know that if they allow stuff like that to be widely used, that's the first domino. Someone's going to ask the question, quite obviously, how does this work?
Yeah.
And now that domino's gone. And now we've hit another domino. Oh, so the body's not like we thought it was. Another domino's gone. And suddenly we're starting to realize, we're going down the road of realizing that even our reality in the end is nothing like we thought it was. So they have to defend the first domino. And so they will go apparently over the top at that first domino point. And with sort of irrational hostility and jail people and all the rest of it. And it's because when that domino goes, then the road leads to an awareness that will bring an end to the game.
Can we say, though, that David Icke, isn't that horse kind of already out of the barn in many of these ideas? And that domino's already been knocked over and it's open? It's out there?
Well, some of them are, yes.
Uh-huh.
But there's a great difference, Patrick, between people who have opened their minds to these things, and the great vast majority the global population has never heard of them.
And that's the challenge ahead.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. When I talk about defending the first domino, mm-hmm. I'm talking about defending it in the main public arena. If this technology and this understanding was widely used and used in hospitals and stuff, then the dominoes really start to fall. But as long as they can keep it on the periphery, they know that they can't keep conscious awareness out of the game completely. What they can do is try to keep it out of the game for the vast majority of people operating in the main public arena. That's why they know that there'll be some alternative communication that people can see, but they want to control the main sources of information that people receive, the mainstream media.
Yeah, so that's why they allow One Radio Network and David Icke and Alex Jones or whoever, people are out there kind of on the edge, you know, getting information. They allow that to go on or don't try to stop it much because they just figure that the great majority is never going to hear it anyway. So what's the matter? It doesn't hurt anything.
Well, I think two
things. Is that fair?
In a way, yeah. What I would say is they would much rather that none of those people, including myself, were around. They really would. But they have another technique, which I call the holding position.
Holding position?
The holding position. So their ideal is that none of these people exist and none of these people do anything that they're doing. Mm-hmm. They can't stop everything, therefore they have a holding position, and that means let's keep it out of the public arena. Let's ridicule these people, let's marginalize these people, let's make it as difficult as we can for these people. Mm-hmm. For instance, I'll give you an example of the 9/11 holding position.
Okay.
The first one was, it was 19 terrorists and that couldn't fly Cessnas who flew wide-body jets. That's what they want people to believe. And then when significant numbers of people wouldn't believe that, they went to a holding position. And the holding position was, well, that was true, but, you know, there was this incompetence within government in reacting to it, and there's this competence in government in not stopping it because this person didn't listen to that person, and this intelligence wasn't passed on to this person. It's a holding position.
Yes, sir.
And it's trying to keep the truth out, which is it was an inside job orchestrated to create a problem which they could then offer the solution to, which was the Orwellian state that's being introduced to protect us from terrorism,
uh-huh.
etc.
Yeah.
So these holding positions happen all over the place. And you know, the thing is, though, that if you become conscious and you start to express that consciousness, and one major way that consciousness expresses itself is a lack of fear and a lack of intimidation, then you can start breaking this whole thing down.
You know, that's really where I wanted to kind of end and wrap with you, this idea of fear, and it seems like the big one. Of course, it's many of the big ones. But David, I would like to get your opinion and actually a recommendation on something like this for those like myself, and you want to get information out and you want to have people think about the idea of maybe preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. How do we do that without instilling more fear? You know what I'm saying? Say, for example, we know that there's a bunch of different prison camps out there, right? And so, I mean, you think it's like my job or other people's jobs like yourself to really tell people about that? Because isn't that just putting that illusion out there? I'm confused about that. Help with that.
I've come across this many times.
Yeah, I'm really curious what you think about that.
Someone said to me the other day, I nearly fell off my chair, mind, that the best thing that people like me, Alex Jones and Jeff Renz, could do is stop commenting on the news and stop exposing the conspiracy, which is kind of extraordinary because when someone eventually knocks on their door in a uniform and says, okay, you're coming with me, they'll go, well, I didn't know that was going on. Right. Now, the thing is, this is the point. We live in a multi-leveled reality. Mm-hmm. We have a physical reality where things play out. We have a mind reality. We have conscious reality. We have different levels of reality. If we are going to make a difference, it's no good operating on one wavelength and ignoring the others. Mm-hmm. We need to operate across all wavelengths. And that's why right from the start, Patrick, when I started writing about this, you will find no book of mine that exposes the conspiracy, that doesn't talk about the power of the human consciousness, mm-hmm. and the need to become conscious.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, knowing the game that we face, and knowing through consciousness that we have the power to change the game that we face, those two things must go hand in hand.
I see.
I see so many people, sitting cross-legged on a mountain saying, oh, it's negative, you can't talk about that. and it's absolutely insane. It's juvenile. It's the stuff of the playground. A lot of it is denial. A lot of it is trying to ignore the fact that it's happening. And if you do that, what happens? You leave the game to be played by those who have a malevolent intent. We have to operate across all these levels. And while opening to consciousness and understanding our own infinite power and infinite potential, we also have to get streetwise about the situations that we face. Otherwise, how can we do anything about them?
So it's trusting in God, but tying up your camel, so to speak, to seeing what is and not being fearful of it or react against it, and just seeing what it is and kind of resisting not evil, so to speak.
Yeah, I use this analogy a number of times. You can stick your head in a bucket of sand and ignore the fact that a tornado is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But the tornado is coming, and your bum is still in the air, and the tornado is coming.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you lift your head out of the sand and face the fact that a tornado is coming, you can now take avoiding action. You've given yourself the power of understanding what you face to not face what's coming your way.
Yes, sir.
And if you don't do that, then it's a term I use. Ignorance is bliss, but only for a while.
So that's our job, to see really what is going on, and then get cleverer and stay out of the way of problems.
Yeah, well, I would say get clever. I think clever is an aspect of mind.
Okay.
I would say get wise,
which
is an aspect of consciousness.
Yeah. Similar to what we do with money once a week, where we try to understand exactly how this game is played, and then get wise about how to deal with the thing they call the dollar or whatever it is.
Yeah, and in the end, we're going to walk away from that stuff. We're going to need it. It's all part of the program.
Well, you're a fascinating fellow to talk with. What is your latest book, and also a few of the appearances, because we have listeners all over the world on the podcast, some of your appearances coming up that you can plug?
Well, my last book is The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It, which is a compendium of all these different multi-levels that we're talking about, including the nature of reality, which I start out the book with.
And that's on davidicke.com,
yeah,
right?
You can get it at davidicke.com. I'm talking in Los Angeles at the Conscious Living Conference for 7 hours the 16th of February, and then going to Mexico in early March, and then I'm going to Australia to speak in Melbourne on the 11th of April, and there's other events underway in Croatia, in Brazil, in Greece, and so it goes
wow.
on. It's a busy year.
Good for you. And you have a family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do my work alone, but I have a family, absolutely.
That's terrific. Well, thanks so much for all of your time. People can get the dates and the exact places on those events you mentioned at davidicke.com and information on your books. Mr. Icke, all the best to you in 09, and appreciate your work and your dedication and all of our love from here at OneRadioNetwork.com.
Thank you, Patrick. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, sir. David Icke. This is Patrick Timpone. Great stuff, huh? DavidIcke.com, and we will see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock as we do our little Open Phone Friday, where we do 2 hours kind of wrapping up the week's conversations. We're going to have a lot of information more about the oral pathology research that I'm doing and the amazing connection it has to all organs in the body, cavitations and bad teeth. It's just amazing. It's really something that I know that you're going to want to learn more about. I trust you will anyway. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. My name is Patrick Timpone, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. I love you all very much. If I can help you anytime, Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. See you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Take care. Know the Source on One Radio Network.